I spoke to Nigel Farage, who's in Dallas. Now, he's the honorary president, founder of Reform, and I started by asking him whether he was disappointed that, actually, a guest we're having on the show a little bit later, Jacob Rees-Mogg, voted for the safety of Rwanda bill, even though Jacob Rees-Mogg made it absolutely clear that he didn't think it was going to work terribly well.
No, I like Jacob very much, but he will always, always put the party first. Whether the party's doing the right thing or the wrong thing, it's always party first with Jacob. It was, I'm afraid, over Theresa May's surrender document, and thus it is again. But, I mean, look, to be honest with you, I think whether these amendments had gone through and we'd had a toughened-up Rwanda bill or what the government had put down in the first place, I don't think any of it makes any difference anyway. None of it is going to survive legal challenge because of international agreements that we've signed. There was no preparedness in the British government to change those. And I feel quite angry because I think for over 600 days, ever since Boris Johnson gave that speech at Lyd Airport, when we were told that people would go to Rwanda, we've wasted hundreds of millions of pounds of taxpayers' money, vast amounts of parliamentary time, press time, people's energy and emotions, and it's taken us no nearer any solutions whatsoever. Frankly, the whole thing is a charade.
And what did you make of Paul Kagame, the president of Rwanda, saying, well, if he was in a charitable mood, he might give us some money back?
Yeah, I mean, even Kagame from Rwanda has had enough of it all. Even he's bored and tired of the ridiculous games that are being played by a Conservative Party, constantly navel-gazing, always at war with each other. In fact, they've spent more time since the election of 2019 talking about themselves and their own differences than they have getting on with the country. So, no, when even Rwanda are offering to give you the money back, you know the game is up.
Which presumably means that Reform, the party that you helped to create, has got to challenge the Tories in every single seat.
I think they do, yes. And there's always been this argument, you know, about UKIP or the Brexit Party. Should we stand against Eurosceptic Tories or indeed Eurosceptic Labour MPs over the years? I have to say, I do agree with Richard Tice when he says that actually the Conservative Party are the problem and not the solution here, because they pretend at elections to be things that they frankly don't do in office. So I don't doubt Richard's determination to stand everywhere in the next election.
Now, there's a technical question I wanted to ask you, because I read a very interesting piece that said Reform has a different structure to many parties, that it's effectively a company, and that you're the majority shareholder. Is that right? And what does that mean in practice?
Well, I set the Brexit Party up as a limited company, a company limited by guarantee. And that meant, frankly, you could have a board meeting, make a decision. And I didn't know very long, did I? You know, I mean, literally 6 weeks after I launched it, we fought a European election. So that's the structure that was set up. It was run like a business. It ran very, very well. That then morphed into being the Reform Party. So, yeah, at the moment, you're right. I am the majority shareholder. That is something over time that will need to change.
Because why does it need to change? Why don't you want to have that ownership and influence?
Because if you want people to give you money and join an organisation, you have to give them some sense of ownership and some sense of say. And that is when you have to start building, you know, national executive committees or whatever it is. That's fine if you've got time to build a party structure. We didn't have it back in 2019 when I founded this.
Have you got enough time now before the election to do that with Reform? Or?
No. Oh, okay. No, I don't think we have.
Okay, all right.
No, I don't think we have. I mean, in time, yes, sure. But no, not now.
Now, you've just been in Iowa. You've seen your friend Donald Trump. Was he surprised by the margin of victory that he had there?
What is so interesting about Iowa? Two things that contrast amazingly with Westminster politics and UK politics today. Number one, to go out and attend the caucus, to see people arriving in ridiculous temperatures, horrific road conditions, turning up. I went to a gymnasium, a school gymnasium. Hundreds of people turned up. They listened to speeches on behalf of the candidates. They voted. They accepted the result. It was a wonderful exercise in real democracy. Your vote in America matters. And the other fascination is this. The clear majority of Iowan elected politicians at state level, including the governor, publicly backed Ron DeSantis. Many of the great and the good in the Republican movement and the biggest donors backed Nikki Haley. And yet, why did Donald Trump get this amazing, historic vote? Because under an open primary system, the people have their say and they can beat the elites, they can beat the establishment. And I tell you something, if the British Conservative Party today had a series of caucuses around the country to choose who the next leader should be, it wouldn't be Rishi Sunak. In fact, I doubt it would be anybody in the current cabinet.
Would it be you?
Whether it be me or somebody else, I'm not going to speculate. But honestly, I saw this with my own eyes. Grassroots politics, democracy matters, producing a result completely different to that that would be produced under the British system today. Our democracy feels dead. People are asking themselves, what's the point in voting at the next election? What's the real difference between these two parties? They're both forms of big state social democracy. It was invigorating to see it, and it really makes me keener than ever to have a wholesale reform of how we do British politics.
I think it is an absolutely fascinating and important subject. But I just need to get back to Trump for a second. Are there any circumstances that you can see in which he doesn't, A, become the candidate, and B, end up as president?
I think that he will be the candidate. I think there's little doubt about that. I think after Super Tuesday on the 5th of March, that will be the end of the contest. I think he will run. I think he will manage to overcome the legal obstacles. There are many of them, I know. They look highly political. Every time he's indicted, he goes up in the polls. No, he will be the next US president. And very, very interesting that Jamie Dimon, Wall Street, you know, titan, today was coming out saying, maybe we better start being a little bit less rude about Trump. He's been right with many of his predictions. When Wall Street starts to say that about Trump, Wall Street thinks Trump is going to win the election. I have little doubt that he would be 47th president of the USA.
Finally, if the UK and the US elections are at the same time, which they may well be in November, where are you going to be?
That's a really good question. Where am I going to be? Well, as you know, I'm the honorary president of Reform. I'm busy with my day job at GB News, which I thoroughly enjoy. I do intend to cover both of the elections. So you're definitely not
standing in the UK. That sounds to me like you've made that decision.
I think it's unlikely, but, you know, never say never.
Nigel Farage, as always, good to see you.